Good morning, Houston. Against the grain's beloved Dodger fan and poet laureate Jacob Lozano Bolanos came into our recording session today wearing a polo, short sleeve polo, with every single button up to the very top, perfectly fastened. Folks, what do we have to say?
Yeah, it's atrocious. Like, what are we doing?
That's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. That is a perfectly reasonable thing.
It is not a reasonable fit for a grown man to come in with the top button on, dude.
A young gentleman like that? That's a young respectable gentleman. Young man.
Bro, a grown man afraid to show skin. Like, what are we... Bro, it's not, like... Bro, it's not the 60s anymore.
Roll the music. Let's talk some ball.
This is K-True on 96.1, KTRU, LP, Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on K-True 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show, where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Saturday at 7 a.m. right here on K-True 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, and now Apple Podcasts as of this week. To stay in the loop, make sure to follow us on both Instagram and TikTok. We will be kicking off our K-True Sports Hour with Around the Hedges here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges, so to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. We're going to start off by giving our flowers to the Rice University women's soccer team, who are on an absolute tear in the American Athletic Conference tournament in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. They were the number 6 seed in the 8-team bracket. They beat number 3 Tulsa 1-0 in their quarterfinal round on Monday. Eileen Albers scored the game-winning goal off an assist from Jaden Jaeger, and Kirsten Ruff made a career-high 9 saves in goal during the match. They beat number 7 South Florida 6-5 in penalties in the semifinals after going scoreless through 90 minutes of regulation. There were several saves in the opening minutes by the aforementioned Kirsten Ruff, and Piper Bezorek, Sophie Zhang, Leah Chansey, Lily Reuscher, and Olivia Duval all made penalties leading up to Jordan Merriam's clinching shot in round 7 of the thrilling shootout. They will take on the 5-seeded UTSA Roadrunners in the conference championship match at 1 p.m. Central on Sunday on ESPNU, which is a great spotlight for the Owls soccer program. UTSA knocked off the conference number 1 seed Memphis 3-1 on Pens in the semis to reach this title bout with the Rice Owls. A sport that we talked a lot about last year, Rice cross country, just concluded their season. Is towards the conclusion of their season. The men finished 5th overall at the American Athletic Conference Championships last weekend. Gus the Bus Gannon led the Owls, finishing 24th overall with a time of 24 minutes and 33 seconds. Ben Tijerina, Jackson Moran, Brandon Martz, and Marcus Guyton all finished in the top 50 for the Owls. The women's team finished 2nd in the conference, losing only to Tulane and beating out 3rd place Charlotte by 6 points. Aluia Kopek and Alex Gobron were both awarded all-conference honors after finishing in the top 10. Kopek finished 3rd in the championship for the 2nd consecutive year with a time of 20 minutes and 31 seconds. Gobron finished 6th, just 5 seconds behind. Miranda Shervor, Heidi Nelson, and Daphne Mayer were all in the top 25 at the conference tournament race for the Owl women. Both the men's and women's teams will race at the NCAA South Regional in Fayetteville, Arkansas next Friday, November 14th. Great work by the Owl runners on the country there. The Rice men's tennis team rolled past Lubbock Christian in their final match of the fall season as they wrapped up an invitational tournament. But doubles pair Petra Kuzmanok and Santiago Navarro will head to the ITA Conference Masters this weekend in San Diego. That's from November 6th to 9th. That's going on as you're listening to this after winning the AAC Men's Doubles Championship a few weeks ago in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That is the 2nd year in a row that Rice tennis has sent a representative to the tournament. Last year, Divna Ratkovic represented the Rice women in singles in Georgia in the women's iteration of the same tournament. So great stuff all around the hedges from Rice athletics. We are now going to kick it to our first segment of the show, where we will discuss the great, the one, the only, the National Football League. Garrett, take it away.
Gentlemen, as a Thursday night drinker and a Thursday night football enjoyer, this season has been one of the best in recent memory, and I think the biggest storyline of all has been the emergence of the Indianapolis Colts and that man, Indiana Jones. And speaking of the great white from Indiana, Mr. Daniel Jones, what are we thinking about the MVP race so far this year?
So it will not be Daniel Jones. I mean, did we watch that Steelers game last week? I think case in point. I mean, MJ, who's with us for the segment today, can tell you as a Giants fan that Daniel Jones will, the real Daniel Jones will show up when it really matters. So I'm not
on his face. I've seen that way too many times as a Giants fan.
Yeah, I'm not buying that stock. I'm selling all the Daniel Jones stock right now, in my opinion. I would go for a guy like Drake May, where the stats aren't backing up like the MVP. Like, you know, you think of the MVP having like 3 touchdowns a game and all that. He has 17 touchdowns in 9 games right now, 7-2, only 4 picks and 250 yards a game passing. And you just see the jump that the Patriots have taken as a team. I know for some of us here in the studio, they might be a fraud candidate, but I just see like him taking his jump has coincided with the Pats taking a jump this year as a team. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think he's going to be a great player for several years to come. And I think that second year of Drake May, I think, is going to get a lot of voters to get voting for him, in my opinion.
Yeah, the Patriots are getting ready to crash and burn. They're 7-2. They're so fraudulent. They've one score win over the Dolphins, Saints, and Falcons, and they've lost to the Steelers and the Raiders. All right, they're 7-2. They've got a half the season coming up. I think Drake May looks good, but if you want to compare what he does as a team, I don't think it's happening.
So okay, so Jackson, then who would you say then for MVP if it's not Drake May?
I don't know. I'm a pretty diehard Cowboys fan.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. Okay.
Let's get Dakota Rain back in the conversation.
All right.
I think everybody's fraudulent in this first half of the season. So, you know, as the season goes on, I'd like to see what happens here.
So your answer
like Baker Mayfield as well. So we'll see what he does too without Mike Evans.
So we just asked him who his MVP candidate is, and he said, "We will see." Nice job.
Give me Justin Herbert. The way he's been
What are we doing?
The way he's been playing with Madison Beer, watching him, have we just look at how he's, you know, been able to drag that sorry team to a
They're
winning record.
They're not sorry, though. I mean, weapons are, like, arguably some of the best
playing,
in the league.
He's playing with, like, one of the worst offensive line. Like, his
Chargers'
offensive line
is sorry, yeah.
Like,
it's not that bad, though.
No, it's bad, bro. It's bro. Without Joe Alt and without Rashawn Slater,
Joe
they
Alt
have...
Joe Alt is back, no?
He just got injured again with another high ankle sprain.
He's out for the season that high ankle sprain.
So, it does look rough for the Chargers. I just don't know. Like, I think... To be MVP, sadly, like, your team has to be competitive come, like, January. And I'm with the offensive line injuries, I'm just not entirely sure the Chargers will make the playoffs.
Also, I don't know how we've gotten this far in the MVP conversation without mentioning someone from Herbert's division. Patrick Mahomes, anyone?
Yeah, like, he was the favorite going into the weekend before the Bills loss, I think.
And he wasn't even that bad in the Bills loss, really.
Well, yeah, he wasn't awful, but he did complete less than 50% of his throws, which I think is the worst his completion percentage has been all of his career. But I agree with you, Garrett, in that, and I'm not a big Chiefs guy, as we know, but I think Mahomes is having one of his best years since like his first few. It's just, again, about the record, and I think voter fatigue is real, and he hasn't won an MVP in a while still, but yeah.
I think that'll honestly work in his favor that he hasn't won one in a few years. Sure. Now it feels like the Chiefs are somehow more of an underdog, even though they've made Super Bowls in like 3 straight seasons.
Yeah.
It feels like the narrative is going his way. But on the topic of the Chiefs, a team that's on the outside looking in, currently the 8th seed, who else do we think are some playoff sleepers, teams that are in the hunt right now that could get into the playoffs and maybe make some noise once they get there?
I like the Ravens. I mean, this team is either 10th or 11th in the AFC, and you think about a team led by Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, with Todd Monken as the OC at the helm. This team is always scheming in the run game. Their offensive line is very, very good. And coming in as a 3-5 record, you can't help but wonder how a team like the Ravens, especially in the AFC North, isn't a little bit more competitive. And with their schedule coming up, I think they're going to do some real damage.
Yeah, it's a weak division, isn't it? Like, the Steelers have looked good, but, like, you wonder, like, I don't know, is the Aaron Rodgers thing going to work the whole season? Bengals, the less said about them, the better, honestly. Dude, the Browns are no factors.
The craziest thing about that division is when the Ravens were 2-5 before this last week even, they were still the betting favorite to win the division.
Yeah, I would see that. And it was like – but, I mean, like, that's what happens when you have Lamar, right? So long as they just beat the people that they need to beat, they'll be fine. I was thinking the Seahawks, and I know that they're currently the 3 seed, but I honestly think the Seahawks are the best team in the NFC West, better than the Rams and better than the 49ers. Sam Darnold, and look, want to pay a tribute to our guy Max Bacerdo, who I don't think we'll see him on the podcast for a while, but he is a Seahawks fan, and he was telling me, hey, man, believe, and I wasn't believing it. Saw them smoke my Texans, saw them smoke the Commanders, and I was like, you know, I think they're legit. Sam Darnold is playing the best ball he's played in his career. He's proving, like, the doubters from the Minnesota days or from the Minnesota games last year wrong, such as myself. JSN is probably the best receiver in the league, along with Puka Nakua. And
I
like
think he tops that's crazy recency bias.
I think he tops Puka.
No, I think he's. Do you know he's having like he has over 100 yards a game this season. He's averaging over 100 yards a game. Like that's not easy to do.
We can ignore what JSN and Puka are doing in the privacy of their own division. It's still Jay Jettis and Jamar's league.
But like I'm saying, this season JSN has probably been the best. Like, he's probably in the running for Offensive Player of the Year, you know?
Yeah, he's so second I think, behind Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, and then the Seahawks defense is, like, amazing. They have a lot of guys working well. Mike McDonald is a great coach, so.
I think that's what's overlooked about the Seahawks is their defense has been so dominant.
Yeah, they're amazing. So I think, that's the thing. The reason I talk about the offense is because we know the defense was going to be good with the coaching, but the offense really stepping up after letting go of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who were, like, big pieces of that offense for so long. I think that's been really impressive. So especially if they win the division, I would look at them to make some noise in the NFC.
Okay. We've talked about the sleepers. We've talked about the MVP. What about some potential frauds? Julian, you already mentioned the Patriots. Do we think of anyone else in the league right now is just a total fraud? In the AFC, there are so many to talk about, in my opinion.
MJ, you got to help me out on this one because we were talking about this before we started airing. The Broncos are so bad, and they are the number one seed in the AFC, and I just don't buy any of it. Like, y'all, it took a last-second field goal to beat a Davis Mills-led Texans team, bro. It was, like, I was watching that game, and it was just genuinely terrible. And I know we have a good defense, but you've seen it, like, throughout the year. Like, that Giants game, like, the crazy one where, like, they came back and scored, like, 30 in the fourth quarter. Like, you're not going to be able to do that, like, every week, and you won't be able to do that in the playoffs. I just think Bo Nix still has a lot to prove. The running game, even though they have two talented running backs, is not as good as, like, the, like, people might say. And then the receivers, they need a number one guy, and Cortland Sutton is good, but he's been sort of up and down. So, I don't know. I just don't buy the Broncos. Pat Surtain's going to be out for a couple games. And I don't think Sean Payton has been a great decision maker for the Broncos, honestly, this year. I know he's been a little bit frustrating for Broncos fans to watch coach. But I don't know. Neil might have
a Broncos defender.
A Broncos fan from Denver, look, I'll admit, the wins have not been pretty. The games have really kept us on edge every single time. But I think we have a lot of talent out on the field. It's just how we're using it and how we're maximizing our potential. Looking at our defense, we have, like, you know, the most sacks in the league. We have, I think, the most sacks in 10 games since, like, 1980. So, like, our our defense is so good. Like,
Nick Benito's really good, too.
Nick Benito should be defensive player of the year conversation.
He's up there, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. But in terms of our offense, I think what we need to do is we need to have Sean Payton off play calling. Like, it is so frustrating as a Broncos fan watching every single play, he just give it to the running back, 3 and out every single time. And then when the fourth quarter we're down, he finally trusts Bo Nix to throw the ball. Like, if you're talking about the Giants game, watching Bo Nix in that fourth quarter when he has free reign over that offense, like, that was peak. And I think what we need to do is we need to stop acting so conservative and actually, like, you know, give Bo Nix the trust to handle this offense. And also, the trade deadline was the most infuriating thing as a Broncos fan. Watching George Patton just watch everything happen while he did nothing, like, We need a receiver.
Yeah, y'all were in for Jalen Waddle, right? But didn't want to give up what the Dolphins were asking for, right?
Jalen Waddle would have been
that would have been a great pickup. Yeah. Good analysis there. So I just don't think
you think the problem is not enough Bo Nix. Not enough. Not that Bo Nix is just not him.
Bo Nix is him. Like don't doubt on Bo Nix.
Okay. I am such a doubter on Bo Nix after watching all of last night's game.
I think we could get the number one seed in the AFC if we just lock in on our offensive play call.
Here's the thing. I think y'all could totally get the number one seed. But it's like the class – we've seen this before. Like the number one seed that gets probably lucky with the scheduling or with results and then completely collapses in the playoffs. Now, what's difficult is that Denver is one of the hardest places to play in come January. So that could be in y'all's favor. But I just don't believe in this Broncos team at all.
You know who the fraudulent Broncos actually beat this season? The even more fraudulent Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles are 6-2. It's the same story every single year. Every single game they played this year is a one possession, a one score game.
They won the Super Bowl last year, buddy.
They lost. They beat the Cowboys by one score in the season opener in Philadelphia. The Cowboys are atrocious this year. I say that as a diehard Cowboys fan. They have the Packers, the Lions, and then America's team. In the next 3 weeks, these next 3 weeks are going to be the defining moments of the Eagles season. I think Saquon is having a slow start to the year. A.J. Brown is a diva. I can name about 15 quarterbacks that are better than Jalen Hurts. The Eagles are just, they're not looking good this year, and I can't wait for them to crash and burn, just like the Patriots.
I'm going to, I'll step up for you here, Julian, because when you talked about the Eagles last year, it didn't go so well for you.
Yeah, my bad.
I think we should not be premature in writing the Eagles obituary, because they have been turning it around in recent weeks after a horrendous offensive start to the season. Both A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith have gotten going a little bit. Saquon just had a 150 rushing yard game. Like, I think this is the story of the Eagles of when you have so much coordinator turnover every year, you automatically start slower.
Their OC is so bad. Their OC is so bad.
But their offense is so talented. Like, they're going to be able to figure it out, I think, is the deal. And I'm not saying they're for sure like a shoe-in to make the Super Bowl again, but I think calling them fraudulent is just way over the top.
Yeah, I would tend to agree.
Especially when there are teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars out there. They truly suck.
Bro, honestly, they shouldn't even be like – they shouldn't even be in the playoffs. They're so...
The AFC South division needs to just be nuked from the face of the
earth. They're so mid, yeah.
With that being said, let's get a couple rapid-fire ones in before we get into a little Rice basketball discussion. Any thoughts on who the next coach to be fired this year will be?
Not saying he will, but just because he needs to after that atrocity last week. Zach Taylor, get this man out of Cincinnati. Ooh. Please, bro, please. As a neutral fan, get Joe Burrow some help by firing his head coach, please.
Dude, he's an offensive coach. What?
Bro, he's so bad.
I don't see that happening, to be honest. But what I do see happening, even though the Dolphins said that they're not going to let go of Mike McDaniel, is that there's some sort of change that needs to be happening here. They just got rid of the GM. I think Mike McDaniel should be the next one to go. This Dolphins team is extremely uninspiring. And especially with a team like the Jets, learning how to rebuild, trading for all those picks, it's gonna be tough these next few years with the Patriots on the rise, the Bills always dominating. The Dolphins aren't in a very good spot here.
All right, let's shift gears real quick. Going to fantasy football, who's been y'all's biggest breakout surprise of the year? Julian, your team sucks, so you might want to sit this one out.
Rico Dowdle's pretty good. That's all.
Give me Javonte Williams. I mean, like,
he's averaging almost a touchdown a week lately. He's what an upside he's had coming from Denver. Mm-hmm.
Definitely a surprise. MJ, any?
I like Tyler Warren. Indiana Jones has been feeding him the ball a little bit. He's slowed down these last couple of weeks, but on a team with not a true number one target, Tyler Warren's been stepping up.
All right, last one real quick. Can we get everyone's Super Bowl matchup prediction? Who do we think it's going to be?
Start with Neil, yeah?
Give me Bills-Lions.
Okay. I got Chiefs over Seahawks.
I'll take the Chiefs over the Bucks.
Give me Colts-Bucks.
Bro. Okay. All right.
I believe in Indiana Jones. Dude,
believe. I'll take the Bills over the Rams.
Wow, no one predicted the Cowboys. That's crazy. With all that said, phenomenal little NFL recap. Let's get into the Owls of Rice University here on this phenomenal alumni weekend. How is Rice's men's and women's basketball teams going to look?
All right, let's dive into Rice Owls basketball. So first off, let's start with the men's basketball team.
Rice's men's basketball team has always had a lot of turnover between year to year, but what makes this year different for y'all? What are y'all looking forward to?
I mean, I think one thing is we lost a lot of players, right? So we lost Ufochukwu going to Duke, obviously transfer. Kellen Amos, MIA, I think he's just graduated and can't play anymore. I couldn't find any info on him. Emery Lanier is now a graduate assistant. Denver Anglin going to Iona. And then we also lost Jacob Dar to Seton Hall and Alim Husanovic to Honeywell as a financial analyst. So some people are gone. Some people are working. You know, people are moving around. So I think it's going to be kind of a different team, but obviously same coach, a lot of the same staff. We're going to keep a lot of the same mindset. We're going to be trying to be like super gritty, win games with our defense. We don't exactly have like the biggest team. So I think it's really going to come down to a lot of like the guards trying to make plays defensively to like win us these games. Similar to last year, I think shooting could be kind of an issue. We don't exactly have a ton of shooters, and especially losing Husanovic and Dar, who were like our most talented shooters. But I think getting into some guys that could really like make an impact this year. The first one I want to highlight is Jalen Smith, graduate transfer from SMU who redshirted last year. My sources on the team manager, is like gassing this dude up. He says he's crazy athletic, all-around stud, possibly the best player on the team. He shot 38% from three 2 years ago, so effectively makes him our best shooter now. And he was 4 for 5 from three in the first game of the year, where, by the way, we beat the College of Biblical Studies 109-38.
Let's make note of that. They are not in the NCAA. They're actually in the NCAA, National Christian College.
So the validity of this win may be questionable, but we did double their rebounds and we out-assisted them 24-4. So a dominant win nonetheless. Yeah, bless the team, I guess. Does anyone have any thoughts on Nick Anderson, a new transfer from Prairie View A&M?
Yeah, I can talk about Nick Anderson. I think he's got a lot of potential to be a huge addition to this team. He is very athletic, and he is a necessary shooting guard that we need to add to this team. And he actually in the game against Biblical Studies, he had this crazy reverse alley-oop dunk that was just like electric. And so obviously we can't have that every single game, but that kind of athleticism and kind of drive to do these big plays is, I think, something that can add not only a lot of talent and like points offense to this team, but just a lot of energy, a lot of drive, which I think is necessary for this team.
Jacob, anyone who stands out to you?
I'm not sure if you guys have heard the name Cam Carroll, but you guys will definitely hear him soon. He's a star freshman, 3-star recruit. I honestly don't know how we got him. He's such a stud. Just an amazing effort. Just when I see him at practice, he just brightens up my day, seeing that hustle. He's going to be a future Jalen Smith. He's just great all around, just great heart, and he's going to be making those electric plays, getting that lifting up the spirits when the games get tough, and he's going to be a great impact off the bench, and hopefully will soon be a starter later in the season.
All right. We definitely have some exciting prospects to look forward to, but what do y'all feel like the team needs most right now?
Honestly, the team is going to need to really manage how like our big minutes come in this year. We started in the first game with a double big lineup with Akuchi, who was here last year, and then Steven Giwa, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, who's a transfer from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Giwa had 12 rebounds in the first game of the season, so he's going to be like our true center. He doesn't really have like a ton to his game, like offensively, kind of just traditional, like grab boards, defend the rim, like lobs, like layup, stuff like that. I think it'll be interesting to see the role Akuchi takes on this season. I feel like last year as we progressed, he kind of started growing into a little bit of a bigger role. But the fact that this team does only have 3 players above 6'6" on the entire roster and 2 of them are starting means that we're going to have to be really careful like with our substitutions, with our rotations, because we don't want to get caught with like a bunch of little dudes on the court and we're just getting exposed by some like big guy off the bench in conference play.
I completely agree with that. Giwa is actually looking more like a father figure, I've noticed, at practices. He's he leads the team like with spirit, you know? Like, it's about the impact.
Did he button up your shirt today?
No, he did not. But just as a, like I said, like as Fox mentioned, I'm a manager and I get to see the story behind the stats, and this team looks very special to me. I mean, I get to work with all of them individually, and it's just Giwa looks like someone that's going to be the glue of the team and will get us through the rough times.
What have you seen in practice from Trey Broadnax, who was like our de facto leader last year, kind of our main ball handler, really running the offense? How has that changed with all this new personnel coming in and kind of this new, I guess, in like refreshed mentality this year?
He's picking up right where he left off. He has that energy. He keeps that team motivated, and he lightens it up. And he just is just a very bright spot on the team. He just makes sure that everyone is just welcome onto the in the practice area. He's just his Lanier's right hand man, and looking forward for him to make an even bigger impact this year.
All right. So, what do we feel like our season's ceiling is right now?
Yeah, I can talk about that. So obviously, I feel like this team kind of has not had the best reputation in the past couple of seasons. In the American Conference preseason poll, we were ranked 12 out of 13, which is really unfortunate. But I do think a lot of that comes from preconceived notions from the past couple of seasons. And so I actually think that this team has a lot to prove because we have a lot of new additions. We have some new energy, new leaders. And Coach Lanier is now in his second season, so maybe he's kind of gotten the swing of things, feeling out how Rice is going, and he can be more comfortable in that role here. So I actually think that we have a potential to outperform expectations by quite a bit, and I think that if we stay healthy and keep that energy up, that we can actually have a much more successful season than maybe a lot of people expect.
Yeah, I think last year our record was 13-19, so it'd be pretty difficult to do worse than that. But I think one thing that is exciting is like a lot of people have kind of had like the, I guess, noticing that we have a lot more energy. You know, things got kind of stale towards the end of last year especially. So I think honestly, if the team kind of picks up momentum at the start of the season, they can keep it going, they can really mesh well. Like, I feel like it's not crazy to be like hopeful, like 18 maybe wins, 20 wins, like at a stretch, like, I think it's something we could realistically do, and it would be a successful season for us.
I mean, honestly, like picking it up from that point where you say, if we look at their games in non-conference play, I can see them easily getting out, starting conference play with only 4 or 5 losses. I mean, they have obviously difficult matches against Oregon and Tennessee, both away. They lost to Texas State last year, and then they have a trip to Pepperdine. And those are the ones that I kind of see as, like, the more difficult matchups for us. But, I mean, when you're looking at teams like Tarleton State, East Texas A&M, FGCU, shout out to my boy. I believe his name is.
This is your boy, huh?
This is my boy.
Your boy.
Sorry, I'll get back to his name later when I find
him. Is this the road to 1 point?
Yes, the road to 1 point guy. He's on that team. And
wait, I thought he got the 1 point.
He did get. He got 6 points actually. So he actually has more points in Division I basketball than LeBron James, believe it or not.
Wait, fuck it.
But going back to what I was mentioning about the schedule, I believe this schedule is a lot more feasible than last year's. I think getting in that momentum with conference play, starting off conference with only a couple losses, will be great momentum and confidence boosting for the team. And I'm really looking forward to, because just from what I've seen at practices, the team looks a lot more comfortable. Lanier knows exactly what he's looking for from the players, and the players know how to meet those expectations. So when we're all on the same page, we're making sure stuff is being done, that's when the great things start to happen.
All right, lots to look forward to with men's. And now let's move on over to women's basketball, who also managed to start off the year with an amazing win against University of Mary Hardin Baylor.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a beatdown, 102-35. So not really sure if that's like the level of competition that we can really take like a bunch of information from. But I think the most important thing to look at when comparing the team this year to last year is obviously the losses. Most importantly being Malia Fisher, obviously our Rice Athletics GOAT. Right, she averaged 12.6 points per game and 6.5 rebounds last year on 43% shooting, which is pretty great efficiency for women's basketball. Obviously, our best player, team leader, she led the team in stocks per game with about 2, and she actually now plays professional basketball in Germany, so super exciting for her. Shout out, but again, a huge loss. Another big loss is Sue Nulafak, who was our starting center last year. She was the only player to start every single game, averaging 8 points and over 5 rebounds while shooting over 60% from the field. She was really dominant on the inside, averaging over a block per game. She really held things down for us there. But I think we do have some interesting people coming in. We have some new pieces into the rotation. Rachel, what are kind of your thoughts on the exciting things to look out for with this roster?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a few new additions. We got Luann. She's coming from Duke, a junior transfer from Duke. She actually played for Belgium's national team over the summer and had a lot of success there. She did not start in our first game, but I do think she has the potential to become a really big member of this team and potentially a starter as the season goes on. So really excited to see what she does. And then we also picked up Maya Hazelton, a transfer from Virginia Tech, and I think that she can be a really good addition to help out Shelby with that loss of Susie down low, because she's very tall, which is very important in women's basketball, and she's got a good layup, good post move. So I'm curious to see how she's going to pick up here at Rice.
Yeah, Hazelton will be big because, by the way, she is 6'4", which is pretty massive in college women's basketball, and she'll be able to kind of supplement the minutes of Shelby Hayes, who will be our starting center this year, who is listed at 6'1", so maybe not as big as like a traditional center might be. But she did appear in 33 games last year, shooting 57% from the field and 83% from the line. So I think with an increased role this year, as she started the first game, we'll probably be starting every game moving forward. I think it'll be good to have those two kind of working in tandem to hold it down down low.
Yeah, so you mentioned how Shelby is going to have to step up this year. Who else do we feel like has a bigger role to step into? Who's going to be providing more for the team going forward?
100%, I am saying Anaya Alexis, because I say that Anaya is essentially going to take Malia's place. They play the same position. They have very similar styles of play. They have very similar like body types, and so like having that power forward, small forward in Anaya is going to be very important. I do personally think that Anaya is a slightly better shooter than Malia. However, Malia was much more effective at getting to the basket than Anaya, so maybe we can have a little bit of a different role there. But I do think that Anaya is really going to have to step up this year. She was very successful in her freshman year last year. And she was also a second team preseason member, which was congrats to her for getting those honors. I think that Anaya can truly, truly be a staple to this team this year, especially with that loss of Malia.
Yeah, one thing on Anaya too, she finished last year with 10 or more points in 5 of our last 6 games, including 18 points in the second round of the conference tournament against UAB, and then 15 points and 9 rebounds against UTSA in the following game. So a big step up from her would be huge. But I want to talk about Dominique Innes, who averaged 12 points and 5 rebounds per game last year. She was actually on the all-conference team. She set the record for Rice's like 3-pointers in a single season with 80. So you could say she's the best shooter Rice has like ever had. Her volume goes up every single year, so you'd expect this year, especially with Malia being gone, she's going to take another step up and kind of leading this offense, shooting the rock. Like, she's going to be our offensive spark. We're going to need her to take over games, really get the scoring going. But also her kind of partner in the backcourt, Victoria Flores, she was an AAC all-newcomer team after transferring in from TCU. She's also kind of going to be like another offensive engine. We're really going to rely on those two to like score the ball, basically. I think Dominique, Victoria, and then Anaya Alexis, that's going to be like our big three, I guess you could say, in terms of scoring, facilitating, and really getting things done for us. Sorry, okay, another player I want to talk about is Haley Adams. She'll basically be like our power forward, kind of small forward this year. I was kind of checking out her stats, talking to my roommate who actually works on tracking some of the practice stats for the women's team, and she was saying that she kind of comps as like a like Ben Simmons type, maybe not the best scorer, but like efficient when they actually do take shots. She shot 47% last season. She averaged 6.7 points and 7 rebounds per game last year. So even though she's not traditionally listed as like a big, she can actually like get boards for us, which is going to be big considering Shelby is not the biggest center. And Maya Hazelton might not be playing the most minutes off the bench. So I think an increased role for her this year would also be interesting. But overall, like, it's kind of a very different starting lineup. So I think seeing how they mesh, especially earlier in the season, is going to be something to watch out for. And hopefully we can build some momentum, kind of build on the successful season we had last year.
Yeah, what are the changes that you feel like Rice coaching staff is going to have to make considering our new personnel?
I guess just like focusing more on our backcourt rather than our frontcourt, because again, last year we had Malia and Sue, which really kind of held it down for us down low. Whereas with this season, I do feel like we have more of that talent in our guards. So maybe transitioning some of those offensive strategies to keep the ball more at the perimeter, where I feel like those are where more of our strengths lie, whereas last year it was more towards the rim.
Yeah, I think another thing is just going to be playing the hot hand again in the backcourt. Just whoever's kind of taking over any specific game, you really just got to give them the reins and let them run the offense. We don't necessarily have someone who's going to average like 8 assists per game or something and like facilitate everything. So you're really going to have to think about, you know, who's playing well, like who's kind of on form right now and what can they do in that specific game against like whichever team we're playing against.
And so our first game coming up is UH on November 11th. What are we looking forward to? How do we feel like?
Can we talk about South Dakota?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so we're actually playing at South Dakota tonight. That game is in just a few hours. Our girls basketball team is in South Dakota currently, and I actually thought that this game can be really important, and I think it's going to be interesting because ESPN actually has South Dakota favored by, I believe, 91%, which I truly believe is not a representation of what this game is going to be at all. We did see South Dakota last year for our season opener, and we did fall to them by just 2 points. It was a really great game. And South Dakota did lose one of their main guards. However, they do have a lot of talent in the post with Brooklyn Meyer. So I'm curious to see how this game goes, but I just wanted to note that I think favoring South Dakota by 91% is ridiculous. Like that, I just can't believe that that's actually what it is.
So if you were to make a prediction for like the score, like what would you say?
I'm not necessarily like confident that it'll go one way or another, but I do think it's going to be a good game. Like I predict that this game could be very realistically within 10 points.
Okay, so closer than the odds make it seem. I think performing well in this game is going to be a huge like stepping stone to just get the season started off right. I mean, last year we finished 17-17, so I think looking forward as our goal for this year, similar to the men's team, we do want to be aiming for like 18-20 wins and then try and make a run in conference play. And honestly, I think losing Malia is obviously going to be huge, but with the roster we have, I think there's a lot of talent, a lot of potential for people to step up and to increase roles, and I don't think it's crazy to say we could reach 20 wins.
All right, so lots of exciting things to look forward to for both our men's and women's basketball team. And now let's move on to a game for our hosts.
All right, welcome back, everyone, to your favorite Against the Grain segment. We are back for some more sports brain rot. So all you iPad kids out there, this is the moment you have been waiting for. MJ and I have concocted a new game that is debuting on this episode of Against the Grain. We are calling it Guess the College. We have two teams. We have Vets versus Rookies. We have Andrew and Garrett, who you know and love from last year's Chronicle of Episodes and their Guess the Player rivalry. And we have our newcomers, Seth and Neil, ready to dethrone them as champion of Against the Grain random brain rot games. So the way this game works, we are going to read professional athletes that went to the same college. So we have four athletes for each college in increasing level of difficulty. So the last one, hopefully most sports fans would know, but the first one would be impressive, I think, for most of these if they were able to get it. After I read a player, each team will have an opportunity to take a stab at the school. First team to correctly identify, I think we said three schools, is going to take our win.
Yeah, best of five.
Best of five, sure.
Let's run it.
All right, here we go. The first player.
Wait. Can we get a little... Young Bucks, get ready for your welcome to the Against the Grain moment. Okay, kids. Me and Andrew Fox, veterans over here. It's about to be belt to something, okay? Run it up, Ian.
This is like watching Joe Flacco play in the Big 25. Your time
and
is
he's
up.
Dicing him up. And he's dicing him up.
All right, all right.
The unks are here,
hey, gentlemen's game. Gentlemen's game. Let's keep it civil. The first player is Malik Monk.
Oh, we can totally get this.
I got to guess.
Okay, what do you got,
Kentucky?
Andrew? It is Kentucky.
Oh, that's 1-0. That's 1-0.
Wow. Okay, the other Kentucky players we had, so you can get a feel for the increasing relevance of the players, were DeMarcus Cousins, Tyrese Maxey, and then Cat.
DeMarcus Cousins was like second
the
one
SEC,
up.
Of course.
That would have been three, bro.
All right. So the Vets are up 1-0 after that poll from Andrew. Your player for your second school, the first player is Jarrett Allen.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, Texas. It is Texas. MJ, we should have made this harder, bro.
We're cooked.
Okay.
I lucky forgot that.
Okay, I have a few on here that we didn't do because we thought they would be too hard. So if you guys get all these on the first one, we might pull those out.
Jarrett Allen was the first player is crazy, bro. He's like one of the most notable Texas players in the NBA.
After that, we had Colt McCoy. But the last one, it was Colt McCoy and then KD were the last two.
Okay.
Those were UT.
Yeah. People don't get those. That's crazy. Yeah, okay. All right, keep it going.
Okay. The third school, first player, Marcus Smart.
Oh, I know it, bro. Yeah, yeah.
All right, come on, Garrett.
He went to OU, right?
He did not go to OU.
Oh, Marcus Smart. Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State is correct.
Oh, my God.
Dementia.
Oh no!
Oh no!
All-timer setting in for G-Lo.
Shoot! I want to shout out Oklahoma State alums Garth Brooks and Bill Self.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Were those also on there?
No, I almost put Bill Self in there because I thought it'd be really funny.
That would be so
I put
hard
him on there.
And
it wasn't Kansas. The other ones I was gonna read were Barry Sanders, Dez Bryant, and Cade Cunningham.
Oh shoot!
Okay, this one's a little harder. I think we're going up a notch with this next one. Okay, sure. The first player, Jason Kidd.
Huh?
Oh, bro, dude. I.
Yeah?
Went to Cal, right?
He did go to Cal.
Oh,
Seth
no.
is on fire.
It's wraps.
It is 3-1.
Just got boxed up, man.
We're washed.
Nah, okay. Neil didn't do anything, though, bro.
All right, let's keep going because you guys are flying through this. Okay, this one's a little harder, I think. Darren Bland.
Deron Bland, the cowboy?
Deron Bland? I don't know. MJ made this one.
Bro. Give me Eastern Michigan or something.
It is not Eastern Michigan.
I guess I don't
Nebraska?
Know.
Nebraska?
It is not Nebraska. All right, next player, Aaron Judge.
Oh, dude.
I don't know anything.
Yeah?
Fresno State?
Fresno State is correct.
God, dude.
Wow. Seth is on fire.
I'm fried.
Come on, Unks.
Oh, jeez. Okay, it is 4-1. I'm just going to keep reading through these. Okay, this is another one that I thought would be similar difficulty to Fresno State. This might be a little harder, honestly. MJ and I called this one Unk University. That is your first clue. Okay, the first player is Jim Brown.
Are we serious?
Oh, my goodness, bro.
Yeah?
Syracuse.
It is Syracuse.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Bro.
Yo. Yo.
The next players we had were Donovan McNabb, Marvin Harrison Sr., and Carmelo Anthony was the obvious one at the end, though I hope you guys would get it off of. Bro. Seth is on a tear. All right, this is the last one I got. This is the hardest one.
They're
what order
dead.
Do I want to put these in?
Dude, this guy's different.
All right, first player, Spud Webb.
What?
Memphis?
It's not Memphis.
Tennessee.
Not Tennessee. All right, second player, let's go Phillip Rivers.
Oh, that's so gettable, bro.
How many kids did he have at this point?
At least one, probably, bro. Oh, dude, first round draft pick.
That's so long ago, though.
Yeah.
That's bad from a
game. When was he drafted?
Yeah,
when was he
drafted? Should know that, dude.
Auburn?
It is not Auburn.
No.
Utah.
It is not Utah.
It's a good guess for someone with that many kids.
That's what I'm saying.
I thought about putting Utah on here, but I decided it was just a bunch of randos. Okay, the third player is Trey Turner.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh, you guys aren't baseball people.
I'm going to keep it a buck. I don't even know who that is.
All the baseball people told me they would get it from this one.
Is it NC State?
It is NC State.
Dude.
I feel like an old dog
guy,
that just got taken behind the shed and executed.
Right, I think that makes the final score 5-1.
Dude, we
should have
got Jim Brown. I remember watching him.
All
right,
goodness.
That'll do it from Uncle Garrett on his getting whooped on this edition of Sports Brain Rot. What a
Take
showing
me back to the home,
from
bro.
Seth. We might have to give the vets another run at the Young
Dude.
Bucks with a game that favors them a little bit more.
No, what?
That was very impressive. Yeah, trash talk aged like fine wine, Garrett. We are now going to go into our quick hits. So we have four different spiels that are going to update you on what's going on in Houston and or the sports world. Jacob is going to start us off with a sequel to his short segment from last week. If you haven't listened to last week's short edition from Jacob, I encourage you to do so.
You're
it will make this
on
one make slightly more sense, but probably not very much. Jacob, take it away.
After receiving a lot of positive feedback from the audience, I will be blessing your ears with another haiku poem for once again your back-to-back world champions, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Here's an ode to the one and only Miggy Rowe. High fly ball, deep left. Going, going, gone. It's tied. An unsung hero. The Dodgers pulled off one of the most improbable comebacks in World Series history, giving us one of the greatest Game 7s of all time. The Jays had an 81% chance to win the game with one out in the ninth inning. But that 19% was what gave Rojas all he needed to get his first home run against a righty this entire season to tie the game. It was then his heroics that got the force out at home with milliseconds to spare to prevent the Blue Jays from winning. It was truly a spectacular season for the boys in blue. After many had doubted the repeat possibilities following the third seed finish in the NL. To the listeners at home, I wish you all a merry offseason, as your owners should strive to replicate the Dodgers' winning ambition.
Thank you, Jacob. Our next quick hit comes from Andrew.
Yeah, I just want to give a general season shout-out to the Rice women's soccer team. I know Ian talked a little bit about them during Around the Hedges, but they are now moving on to the American Athletic Conference championship game this Sunday at 1 p.m. against UTSA. So it's been a really great season. Only three losses, and when one of them is at UNC and one of them is versus Memphis, those low-key don't count. So basically one loss all year. They're in the final now, and we don't have to play Memphis because my goats, UTSA, tied them 3-3 and then won in penalties. An additional shout-out to UTSA's goalie. She had, like, this crazy blue hair. She stepped up. She scored the first penalty of the shootout for UTSA and then saved the penalty to win it. And I was sleeping while watching, but she was locked. So shout-out her. But now I'm praying on their downfall. And hopefully Rice can win this game and then make the actual, like, NCAA tournament, which would be super cool.
That would indeed be very cool. Thank you, Andrew. Our next quick hit, and this is going to be a good one, comes from our in-house Texans fan, Mr. Julian Puerto.
Denial. Third most sacks allowed last season. Trade away Laremy Tunsil. We're just shaking things up. The Chiefs' playoffs loss was on the refs. We got C.J. Stroud. Nico Collins is a top five receiver in the league. Joe Mixon is really good. Nick Cayley will be better than Bobby Slowick. We'll be fine in the AFC. Anger. We're 0-3. Fire everyone. D'Amico Ryans is a fraud. C.J. Stroud is a bust. It's the stupidest team in the league. 2-4. JSN isn't even that good. I always knew Kyme Fairbairn was a fraud. C.J., stop with the media quotes and just throw the darn football. Bargaining. God, why did you make me a Texans fan? Depression. The Chiefs are winning it again. We're tanking for the foreseeable future. Being a Houston sports fan is the worst. Oh, hey, the Canucks and Liverpool suck too. The Texans will never win a championship in my lifetime. Acceptance. No, scratch that. Numbness. C.J. Stroud concussion. Second in his three seasons in the league. Defense carries the offense just to lose. Cookie-cutter responses to the media from our coaches. General Mills back in the saddle. All is normal. All is well. All is nothing. Get well, C.J. See you in 2026. Ladies and gentlemen, the five stages of grief from the eyes of a 2025 Texans fan increasingly accustomed to failure.
Man, hard to follow something so heart-stopping, but Rachel, why don't you give it a go?
All right, thank you, Julian, for that beautiful comparison. I really don't know how I can follow that, but I want to talk about some Texas hockey real quick. We don't talk about that much here. So the Dallas Stars are having a pretty mid start to their season. We are currently 7-7. Three of those losses coming in overtime losses, which is really disappointing. We are currently fourth in the Central Division right now, so we really need to lock in because we won the Central Division last year. However, on some good news, this past week we had a comeback win against the Oilers, which is really fortunate because any Dallas Stars fan knows that we hate the Oilers because they have taken us out of the Western Conference Finals for 2 years in a row now. So no more Connor McDavid there. Happy we won that game in the shootout in a comeback win. But we do really need to continue to lock in. Mikko Rantanen and Wyatt Johnson have both been having a great start to their seasons, which is amazing for them. We are continuing to prove to the Colorado Avalanche that getting Mikko Rantanen was the correct move, and we did win that trade. And anyone who knows me knows I'm a huge Wyatt Johnson fan, so I am very proud to say that he got two goals and an assist in our most recent game against the Ducks, and he's had his best start to a season so far with 9 goals and 8 assists for 17 points. So good job, Wyatt. You're the best. And then in some personal news, Jake Ottinger just welcomed his first child with his wife, Kennedy. They just welcomed their son named Rhodes Ottinger. So congrats to Jake Ottinger, and we will leave it at a positive note there. So we are going to go ahead and kick off into our prediction segment of the day. So Julian, I'll let you take it away.
Yeah. Get right back to negative Nancy over here.
Yeah, my bad. By the way, we do agree on that. We hate the Oilers, but I will say one of those losses your Dallas Stars had was to your Vancouver Canucks, just so we don't forget, right? Anyways, as we get into the predictions segment, we do have a lot of our members back here in the studio, so bear with us as we get through all of these. But first up, we have UAB at Rice Football on Saturday at 1 p.m. You'll be hearing this just a few hours before kickoff. I will kick it to Andrew to get us started.
I'm going to take Rice and just hope that we finally win a game.
I will take Rice, too, at home.
Give me Rice.
Gotta be the contrarian. Give me UAB.
Real quick, shout out the Ottinger family for finally letting one through the goal, but give me Rice in this game.
All right, one thing I've learned in my time at Rice is to never ever put your faith into Rice football, so give me UAB.
Yeah, give me UAB too.
Give me Rice.
Nice.
That collapse is probably about as good as Rice will be this upcoming game, so give me UAB.
Not a lot of people know this. UAB is actually Memphis's only loss, so give me the UAB.
Unlike Rachel knows as a rook, the vets know that when you pick against Rice, they win. Give me the Owls.
Nice. Okay, next we've got Alabama at St. John's in men's basketball, college men's basketball, sorry. Fox, start us off.
I'm going to take St. John's at home in this one.
Give me St. John's.
You think Rick Pitino's losing in the Garden? Give me St. John's.
Johnny boys as well for me.
Shout out Brandon. I'll go with the Johns.
Yeah, this one was pretty easy for me as well. I'm taking St. John's.
Yep, give me the Johnnies.
St. John's ain't all that. Give me Bama.
Give me St. John's.
Give me the Red Storm.
I will also take the Red Storm. I have way more faith in Pitino than I do Nate Oates.
All right, and last but not least, we've got an interesting matchup on Monday Night Football between the Eagles and the Packers. Should be a very interesting game in the NFC, considering both of these teams' fraudulent season so far, I would say. So, Fox, let's get it started.
In a battle of light-skinned QBs, give me RB1, Jalen Hurts, and the Eagles.
Give me the Packers with the 3.5-point spread.
I'll take the Eagles.
Packers usually play down to competition but play well against the good teams in the regular season. Give me the Packers, even though I don't think they're very good.
If the Packers just had someone like Quinn and Williams, I would pick them, but I'll go with the Eagles.
I thought that was a great take from Julian. Give me the Packers.
Give me the Packers.
Give me the Eagles.
Jalen Hurts is a fraud. Give me the Packers.
You guys are not hating on the Packers enough today. Give me the Eagles.
Lambeau Field is a heck of a place to walk into with fraud allegations on your back. Give me the Packers at home.
All righty. That would be it for our episode as I kick it off to Ian because I do not have the read-off thing at the very end.
I also don't have the read-off, but thank you to our listeners very much for joining us live bright and early on KTRU 96.1 FM or wherever you are listening to this after the fact. This 7 a.m. slot is going to be our recurring airtime throughout the fall semester, so make sure as you're getting up early in your dad era on your way to the hardware store, get some breakfast. You can get your sports fix from the local university and the city of Houston. We will do our best to be here for you as much as we can. Drive safe, wear your seatbelts, eat your veggies, do your homework, all that good stuff. We will see you next week.